First day of fishing, in case you didn't realise it. so it's June 2019, and when did we do our first session here? 2004, I think. Mm-hmm. So you're getting on to about 15 years coming here. And seems like a long time. And I was just recently out in California at the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center where I did my training, and we did a council. It's about 30 of us, and the question was, well, what's your edge? And so you go around and with your talking stick and say what your edge is, and for most people there was about age. A lot of people, teachers are in their 70s and they're talking about creaking bones and retiring and no longer having the verve of youth. And, it's actually 15 years. I felt very young there actually. I'm mid-50s and I think I was the second youngest. One of the teachers there said, well, he said, he does a lot of work in hospice. He said, I hate to break it to you, but it ain't going to get any better. Which I thought was a wonderful, wonderful teaching. In other words, you know, you've got to grasp onto this, whatever you've got now. You'll never have anything more than you've got today. That's from the front lawn as well. So... Yeah, Sesshin is a. It's a structure that has been around for a long time, and it has a specific form, and that form is really based around the schedule and the commitment to that schedule and maintaining that container over the 4 or 5 days that we're here. And the reason we do that is to create a place, a safe place for us to be able to let go of our attachment to thinking. And not thinking itself, but our attachment to thinking and our substitution of thinking for reality. Reality being the things that appear to us through the five or six senses that we have. Basically the things we don't have choices about. And the role of Zazen within that is that it provides us an opportunity to observe the mind and the way that we constantly, give rise to extra stuff. Or put a head on top of our own, or create frost on top of snow, or raise waves where there is no wind, however you want to say it. And we observe that mind. And we observe the thought because the brain kind of secretes thoughts, just like the ear creates sounds in combination with so-called externals. But we observe our creating thought on top of thought. And that's the thing that muddies our experience and causes us a certain amount of suffering. And then outside of Zazen, then there's our walking, our eating, our sleeping, our chanting, our everything else. And that also provides us another opportunity to observe how we use the mind to separate ourselves from this raw experience. And you know, why do we do this thing? I guess we've all got our own reasons and our own, I guess, stories as to why why we'd spend, you know, 4 or 5 days here. And but as the Buddha in his first statement after he woke up under the Bodhi tree, you know, it's really just about that, simply appreciating this basic perfection, you know, that we are. And when I say perfection, it's not perfection like something else that we're striving to achieve or to be like or to anything, but this space of perfection that this is like this right now. And it couldn't be any different. That's what perfect really means. Couldn't be anything but this, you know, sun through the window and thoughts and ideas that float around and the sounds and the just this thing that's arising. But of course he noted that we have upside down thinking about this. We tend to create other stuff. We tend to create another reality. We try and change the universe and move the moon and stars and shift this vast universe to our liking. And you know, that's the cause of suffering, because it ain't gonna move. And yet, you know, we think we can adjust it. And there are things we can adjust, but using our wisdom, the wisdom is about really being aware of that stuff that is impossible to change. And so Zazen really encourages ourselves to really pay attention over this time, to use that container to let go of that, our preferences, let go of the wanting things to be different, and just to return to this basic experience. And we realize, and lots of words we use to talk about it, but realizing this life is Buddha. This life is awakeness, like now. You know, this is our Buddha nature, our self nature, our awakened nature is what we experience right now, what we experience every moment. And that's what intimacy is about. So, like I said, I was at Yokoji's in Mountain Center, and there are all these teachers who've been there for many years, and it was like a really had that feeling of family, and especially I noticed that among the older teachers there who'd all kind of grown up together, they were like brothers and sisters, or you know, like squabbling and arm wrestling and doing everything that families do, and a great amount of love and care there. And they're all really doing different things. You know, it's I don't know how many successes came out of Maizumi Roshi's lineage, but hundreds. And they're all over the world, and mostly in the US and Europe. We're a bit of an outpost down here. They're talking about having meetings, you know, online meetings. So Saison, she's down in San Diego. She said, well, I found this tool on the web where if you put everybody's, you know, time zones in, it comes up with the perfect time you can have a meeting. And it's like, I don't know, whatever it was 9 a.m. in the US or something, which corresponded to pretty well. It's like, it's 4 a.m. in New Zealand. Oh, I've got into New Zealand in there. So actually works okay during summer, I think, for us. It becomes 6 a.m. in New Zealand, but not in winter. Of a 2-hour time slip. And I thought that there's that, you know, kind of old adage that you know, for the that you shouldn't notice in any accomplished person or any Zen teachers, or you know, when you bump into them on the subway or the street. And I thought that was really true over that weekend. And one of my Dharma brothers from Dave Scott from Liverpool, because he's in his mid-70s, he went to bed a bit early, but he was underneath where we were staying, and there was a lot of carousing and whiskey drinking and singing of old ballads going upstairs. And he said, I came all the way to California to experience Zen, but I was lying in bed last night, it seemed just like a Saturday night in Liverpool above me. So I didn't pick up on any holy vibes. And I guess one of the great teachings of being at Zen Mountain Center too is just that it's in a canyon and it's a high, it's in the mountains, so and very dry mountains in Southern California, and they're pretty high, so they go up to about 11,000 feet. So they get a decent amount of snow in winter, but they also in the summer get very dry. And so there's been a series of fires which have come through. One 5-6 years ago and one last year. And you know, it was always that question. When I was there, we were evacuated once. I remember driving out the road, you pile everything into the trucks, so you get a warning of a couple of hours, pile everything into the trucks and boom, you're down the road. Fires either side, and then you're in this kind of a safe zone down the bottom of the valley in a parking lot somewhere, and see these fires marching down the hill towards you, you know, great pine trees going. It's like scary stuff. It's powerful fire. The one 6 years ago, it basically was, everyone thought the centre had been lost, because it was, the fire was coming up this canyon, where the centre is right at the edge, right on the end of the canyon. But by luck or by good fortune and planning, the firefighters were able to do a fire line and protect the centre. So it basically went around the centre and then up to the top of the ridge after that. And so it's just this kind of patch of green, but the fire is within, you know, 20 metres of the building. It's burning on all small patches all around. So, and it's changed the whole landscape. And then straight after that, there was a huge downpour, which created mudslides. And so they came, all the mud and everything came off the mountains and ended up down the valley bottom where the centre was as well. And so they just kind of dug themselves out of that. And these things, so there was another fire last year, which they had to evacuate for as well. And it almost took out the local town of Idlewild, which was just next door. But again, we're able to just save it. And then there was another big rainstorm in February, which again ended up eroding all the road and taking out. Yeah, it just goes on. And sitting in Tension's house, he's kind of looking up the hillside, on a steep hillside, and there are all these big boulders sitting up on the side. He says, I'm not sure about that one up there. And I've had a good look, but it's like, so there's another huge rainstorm or an earthquake, and it's Southern California, so you know, it's on the San Andreas. Those boulders will be tumbling down the valley, so it's one of those things is that the teaching there is really about, you know, it's reality. You've got this thing called Zazen, and you're trying to cultivate a so-called spiritual existence, and you're spending a lot of time working with the environment. And I guess I really appreciate that, because it's that we can't insulate ourselves in a cocoon of so-called spiritual practice and expect that you know, this spiritual practice will take care of our lives. You know, it's like the only way you can take care of your life is by taking care of your life. And you know, the Zazen, while it gives us kind of insights, it doesn't protect us from all kinds of things. You know, the only way we actually manage is by managing. And our spiritual practice, or so-called spiritual practice, gives us, I guess, insights and maybe some strength, but if we don't take that out and you know, fight the fire, dig the hole, whatever it is we need to do to take care of our lives, then nothing happens. And really, we just become a bunch of stone Buddhas sitting around. So that's the challenge, is that, you know, you really put yourself wholeheartedly into whatever's going on. So Sesshin provides that container for us to do that. When we practice Zazen, we practice Zazen. When we eat, we eat. When we work. And that's real intimacy. So it's almost like leaving no tail. And then one of our... I gave a talk there. Everyone else was in bed. I said, Phil, can you do the Sunday morning session? I had to get up and do the Sunday morning public program. And I guess one of my favorite topics is always this talk about, it's always about faith. You know, and I was reading something, I got a recent book that's put out by Genpo Roshi, who's kind of the, does anyone know Genpo Roshi? He's kind of a, he's Maizumi Roshi's second successor, and has been a real, what's been a controversial figure, shall we say, very charismatic man, but has been embroiled in a lot of controversy.
He's a big mind guy, isn't he?
He's a big mind, yeah.
He charges a lot of money too.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Yes. So he's, and anyway, actually he's getting remarried third time, fourth time, I don't know. Attention was going out to do his marriage ceremony in Arizona, I think last weekend. And so and he's established countless Zen centers and then moved on when he gets a bit bored. And there are various kind of affairs and issues with, I don't know so much with money, but he's basically got a very, kind of quite powerful personality, a real, anyway, and and he's been kind of ejected from the White Plum to a certain extent. He used to be the leader of the White, all the successes of Maizumi Roshi, yet he's kind of like one of these figures who's greatly loved, but people can't make head or tail of him, and he's a bit of a maverick in many ways, but anyway, so, and he's written this book called, this one here, Spitting Out the Bones, which is his latest one, and it's a book about, like it's all the things that were inherited, both the Japanese form that we have today, and the spitting out the bones is a phrase from Maizumi Roshi saying, like, you know, I give you this whole fish, the fish is the Dharma. And you need to digest the fish and spit out the bones. In other words, the bones are the things that are, I guess, dispensable. You know, that are maybe some of the forms, things that work, things that maybe don't work. And so he's kind of talking about his practice over a Zen master's 45-year journey of spitting out the bones. And he talks, I haven't read it all yet, but he talks a bit about his relationship with Maizumi Roshi and talking about submission, power, and empowerment between teachers and students. Another thing I have to say is a lot of this encounter in America was like, you really realize that America has a different culture than we do have in New Zealand. You know, it's puritanical, but there's definitely a real sense of verticality as well, even though America's kind of the great non, there's a real sense of, it's not a certain trust or mistrust of power. There's definitely power relationships are quite a subject of talk in America, whereas you don't get them so much here. It's maybe because we're smaller or, anyway, it kind of comes up in Dharma talks and, you know, it's pretty unlikely in New Zealand, I think, less likely that you get these kind of real organisations and a misabuse of power, because I think most people stop very, in New Zealand, I think we don't tend to give away our power so much. We tend to be a bit more kind of cynical. If anyone seems a bit more kind of charismatic or up there, we're like, yeah, I don't know about that. You know, we're kind of a little more, I don't know, but like Missouri, it's kind of like the show me state. Anyway, so he says, it's just a kind of short paragraph about about faith here. He says, what we work on in practice is our life, not some ideal. And a good part of that work is spitting out the bones, so spitting out the bits that are extra, which takes tremendous faith and trust. Trust in oneself as the Buddha Dharma. So trust in oneself as the Buddha Dharma. If we are still judging ourselves, is this Buddhism or not Buddhism? Am I living up to this ideal or not? This is due to a lack of deep realization and a lack of true faith. Not faith in something, but faith in no-thingness, shunyata, or Buddha nature. This realization is what brings out the faith and trust that is already inherent in oneself as Buddha Dharma. If you truly realize that and are living it, everything else is bones. I really appreciate that, is that trust in oneself as the Buddha Dharma. You know, it's like, and that's because when we come to practice, we kind of think we want to seek something else. We want to seek some other kind of appreciation, maybe someone else's appreciation, which gives rise to, as Genpo Roshi starts talking about, the where the kind of power relationship that sometimes come about between teachers and students, because you think maybe the teacher's got it or someone else has got it. and you know, but it's an appreciation of oneself, one's life, as the Buddha Dharma. And again, then we sometimes reinterpret that as going like, okay, I'm trying to match my life up with the Buddha Dharma. You know, but your life is the Buddha Dharma, the Buddha's teaching. And so that really is our practice, you know, it's like that. We talk about direct experience is the life of Buddha. You know, we use kind of these words, and then a lot of those things are bones as well, which kind of we need to spit out. But they also provide us with a container to work in. You know, so this experience is, and it's about trust. And like he says, it takes a tremendous amount of faith and trust. And takes time to build up faith and trust too. And that's why this practice is about consistency as well. Time and time and time again, we come back to this experience. And, you know, we don't quite trust that it will support us, because we're, you know, always using our minds to be able to take care of our lives. And we've been kind of successful to a certain extent, you know. But, you know, this real practice is about letting go. So you'll observe that during Zazen, is that when we let go of thought and come back to our breath or whatever it is, that it's challenging just to be with that, just to let it be. And you know, the mind will start coming up again. And so we let that go and come back to this experience again. And that's building faith, building trust that our life is the Buddha Dharma. I thought I'd just finish with a koan from the Gateless Gate that illustrates this. And koan, again, koan just means a public case. Public as in a private versus a private case, which might be our own, you know, our own views. And a public case is something that's out there for the, it's Peter Cranning, you know, it's like from the law courts. So it's been established as a precedent. And so this is like something that if you can see into this. This is a direct expression of this Buddha Dharma. So this is case 37 from the Mumon Khan. Very simple one. The oak tree in the garden. So this is a case around a monk, an unnamed monk, they're always unnamed monks, and Master Joshu. Master Joshu is a very famous Zen teacher from China. And the case is simply, a monk asked Joshu in all earnestness, "What is the meaning of the ancestors coming from the west?" And Joshu said, "The oak tree there in the garden." So this, the meaning of the ancestors coming from the west really just refers to Bodhidharma, the first Zen ancestor who came from India to China. But basically it's a paraphrase, it's kind of a common saying back then. It's basically, what is this all about? What is the meaning of life? What is Dharma? And Joshu says, the oak tree there in the garden. And this is, so apparently Joshu's monastery, there are a lot of oak trees around. And so he's basically, I guess he's probably just points out there and says, that oak tree out there in the garden. So what does it all come down to? Joshu says, the oak tree in the garden. That's the short version, but the long version, apparently, is... So Joshu says, the oak tree in the garden, and then the monk says, but Master, you should not show us by means of the objective world. And Joshu says, I do not show you by means of the objective world. So the monk asked again, what is the meaning of the ancestors coming from the west? And Joshu answered, the oak tree there in the garden. And just as a little bit aside, there was this, they said there's an interesting story about this koan. I'll just read the commentary from Yamada Roshi. The Shido Bunan Zenji, the Dharma grandfather of Hakuin Zenji, so this is a Japanese teacher now, was traveling along the Tokaido, the famous old road from Kyoto to Edo, present-day Tokyo. A robber was following him and put up at the same inn one night so that he could enter Shido's room in the dark and steal his money. The thief slid back the door a little and peeked in. There in the middle of the room was a garden with an oak tree in it. The robber was bewildered and astounded and looked about with great curiosity. Suddenly he heard a loud voice shout, "Who's there?" At that very instant, the tree changed into the master seated in Zazen. The intruder apologized to Shido for his misconduct and asked to be taught this wonderful technique that would change him into an oak tree. Shido taught him how to do Zazen and gave him a koan. He followed his master's instructions faithfully and finally, overcoming his wickedness, lived as an honest person for the rest of his days. Yeah, so that why I bring up that koan is just that we're always pointing towards, we're always looking for something else. Why, what is the meaning of the ancestors coming from the West? What is this practice about? Why am I here? What's going on? What's my deepest question? And Master Joshu just points out the oak tree in the garden. It's a wonderful koan because it's like it's every aspect of our lives, we're confronted with this oak tree. Also expressed in that story as the oak tree. We're always, I guess, avoiding the fact or uncomfortable with that fact of whatever we are presented at, whatever is our life, is not the thing that we wanted. So Master Joshu here, quite, when he gets questioned, the monk says, don't talk to me about objective things out there. In other words, things that you can see as being something separate to myself. Again says, what is this? Again, the oak tree in the garden. So over the next 3-4 days, we really have the opportunity to continue to bring yourself back to whatever is directly in front of you. And that's the work. And it's a work of building trust, and that's the work that we engage with. Is like when we see the oak tree, when we experience whatever it is that's in front of us, and we have doubts about that experience, and then you become awake to that doubt. Let it go and then bring your mind back to this direct experience. So it is a building up of faith. And this intimacy is what develops. Being at home in the world. Is there an end point to this? No, not really. Life always comes up in new and surprising ways. That's why there are 600 koans or 1,000,000 koans or infinite koans. And we always get surprised, I guess our sticking points, things that we thought we'd dealt with, and they emerge again. But at the baseline is really that practice of that we engage in Zazen, simply to be awake, to observe And then notice that you know, the mind has kind of drifted off somewhere else. And when we notice that, let it go, and then just come back, you know, to this direct experience again. Okay. Should we finish?